Hi, I'm Joe Graydon.
I'm Terry Graydon. Welcome to this podcast of The People's Pharmacy, where we bring you the stories behind the health headlines.
This podcast is brought to you by Reddix Industries, makers of Utterly Smooth Body Cream. 800-345-7339, on the web at uttercream.com. The CDC states that one in three people over 65 has osteoarthritis, but many young people also suffer joint pain. This is The People's Pharmacy with Terry and Joe Graydon.
More than 50 million American adults have been diagnosed with arthritis. That doesn't include another 20 million who have symptoms but no official diagnosis. Painful joints can interfere with everyday activities like walking, kneeling, or holding a cup.
Most people treat their arthritic aches and pains with non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, but such medications have some serious side effects. What else can people do to improve mobility and ease discomfort?
Coming up on The People's Pharmacy, we welcome your questions and stories about arthritis.
First, this news.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, cannabidiol, a derivative of cannabis, reduced seizures by 50% in some patients with a rare type of epilepsy. The study included 225 children and adults with Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, a rare type of seizure disorder that usually begins when people are very young. Lennox-Gastaut syndrome is hard to treat as it does not respond well to most anticonvulsant medications. In particular, people with this type of disorder are susceptible to drop seizures, during which they crumple to the ground in a heap. The episodes don't last long, but may result in injuries from the fall. In the randomized controlled trial, about two-fifths of the volunteers had at least 50% fewer drop seizures on cannabidiol. Those getting placebo did not respond nearly as well. Side effects were very common. More than 90% of those on cannabidiol reported sleepiness, reduced appetite, or other reactions. The rate of side effects was 72% among those on placebo. Cannabidiol does not produce the psychoactive effects such as euphoria that are associated with marijuana. The drug has not yet been approved by the FDA.
Americans are changing their attitudes about marijuana. A new Yahoo News and Marist poll of more than 1,000 adults found that two-thirds think opioids prescribed by a physician are more dangerous than marijuana. The vast majority of the respondents believe that marijuana should be legalized for medicinal purposes. That includes both people who have tried marijuana themselves and those who have never used it.
When women are pregnant, they frequently worry that something they swallow will harm the developing baby. Previous studies have suggested that mothers taking antidepressants might predispose their infants to attention deficit disorder or even autism. This puts women in a terrible bind, since untreated depression can put their own health at risk and thus indirectly harm their babies as well. A new study published in JAMA found no evidence for such psychiatric harm among the children of women using antidepressants during the first trimester of pregnancy. The data included all live births in Sweden between 1996 and 2012, over 1.5 million youngsters. The only complication detected was a 30% increased risk of premature birth. Premature birth is not very common in Sweden, so a 30% increased risk did not affect a large number of deliveries.
There has been considerable controversy about the value of statins for preventing initial heart attacks. No one disputes the importance of this class of cholesterol-lowering drugs for those who have had heart attacks or strokes. A new study finds, however, that many patients do not follow through on taking high-dose statins after their heart attacks. The investigators analyzed data for almost 60,000 Medicare patients. All of them had received a prescription for either atorvastatin or rosuvastatin. Within 2 years, fewer than half were still taking their statin at the prescribed dose. The reason for such dropouts remains unclear. Cost and side effects may play roles.
The higher your vitamin D levels, the less likely you are to die from cardiovascular disease. That's the conclusion from a meta-analysis of 34 studies involving more than 180,000 participants. These were observational studies rather than randomized controlled trials, however. The authors point out that experiments with vitamin D therapy to prevent bone loss have not shown cardiovascular benefits. Given this apparent contradiction, the investigators call for well-designed randomized vitamin D clinical trials to determine if vitamin D has heart protective effects, and if so, what the best dose might be.
Corticosteroids such as methylprednisolone or prednisone are powerful anti-inflammatory medications. Doctors frequently prescribe them for bronchitis, sinusitis, asthma, allergic reactions, and even backache. Many prescribers assume that short-term oral use is associated with minimal risks. A new study involving 1.5 million adults found some unexpected complications. People who took these medications, even short-term, were more likely to break a bone, develop a blood clot, or come down with a serious infection. The risk started immediately and lasted for at least 3 months. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon. I'm a pharmacologist.
I'm Terry Graydon. I'm a medical anthropologist. Today, our topic is joint pain, specifically osteoarthritis. This condition is incredibly common, affecting as many as 50 million Americans, according to the CDC. What can be done to reduce the pain and stiffness of arthritic joints? Is there anything we can do to prevent arthritis?
For answers to all our questions about osteoarthritis, we turn to Dr. Beth Jonas. She's a rheumatologist with the University of North Carolina's Thurston Arthritis Research Center in Chapel Hill, an associate professor of medicine, and director of the UNC Rheumatology Fellowship Training Program. Welcome to the People's Pharmacy, Dr. Jonas.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Jonas, I wonder if you can explain to us, what is arthritis exactly? It's one of those terms that we all use, we all figure we know what it is, but I'm suspecting that we don't know as much as we should.
Well, arthritis can actually be a lot of different things. The word arthritis really means inflammation in joints. So most people with arthritis have pain in their joints. Some forms of arthritis are very inflammatory. Some forms of arthritis are less inflammatory. But most people with arthritis will describe pain, sometimes swelling, often stiffness in the joints.
Now we think of like two major kinds of arthritis. So there's this thing called osteoarthritis, which is fairly common. And then there's this thing called rheumatoid arthritis, which is sort of an immune reaction. I mean, we think of it as an autoimmune disease. And then there's like infectious arthritis. And you go, well, wait a minute, infectious? I can't catch arthritis. But people who get Lyme disease sometimes manifest with joint pain.
That's true. So infection in the joint can take many different forms. So you actually can get an infection, a true infection in a joint. It's pretty uncommon. We see that sometimes in people who have baseline abnormal joints. So if you have some other form of arthritis and you have bacteria in your blood, you can get arthritis from bacteria. But Lyme disease is a little bit different. It's something we think about more like a reactive arthritis. So something in the organism actually can cause inflammation to occur in the joints. But it's very different than a true infection of the joint.
Now, if you have a question about how to ease arthritis pain, you can ask Dr. Jonas. Give us a call at 888-472-3366. Or you can send us an email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com. You can even reach us through Twitter. We're at People's Pharmacy. You can share your own story. What do you do for your stiff joints? Tell us about it. 888-472-3366.
Dr. Jonas, can you help us understand what causes arthritis? Because there seems to be a lot of confusion, especially when it comes to osteoarthritis, because there's this sense, oh, that's just wear and tear. have enough birthdays, you're destined to get osteoarthritis. And yet there are people who live into their 90s without joint pain and doing just fine. And there are people in their 50s and 60s who don't have necessarily a genetic history of it, and yet they're complaining about their joints hurting. There are runners who seem like, hey, you know, you're a marathoner, your knees are going to blow out. But no, they do just fine too. So help us understand this osteoarthritis mess.
So nobody really knows what causes osteoarthritis. We know that there are some people that may be more predisposed by their genetics. So if your parents have osteoarthritis, or if they've had joint replacement, that's sometimes a clue to us that you might have osteoarthritis. But we really don't know what causes it. And it may have many different causes. So some people may get arthritis because they've had trauma to their joint or they've had surgery to their joint. Some people might get arthritis because they, again, have a family member or there's a genetic reason. But there's a lot of things that we don't know about why some people get arthritis and some people don't. And it's true that there are some people who can live till they're 90 and never have it, and some people get it much younger. And we're trying to understand what are the factors that predispose people to the development of osteoarthritis. We used to think about it as sort of a wear and tear, and we're really moving away from that right now. I think our understanding of the disease itself suggests that really all parts of the joint, the synovium, the cartilage, even the bone may have changes that are inflammatory that cause this to occur. But this idea that you pound your joints too hard and you'll get osteoarthritis is really pretty much going away now.
So you just mentioned three different parts of the joint. Mm-hmm. The bone, I think everybody knows what bone is. Cartilage is that sort of gristly stuff that connects the bones together, right?
Well, it doesn't really connect the bones together, but it really sort of covers the surface of the bone mm-hmm. and makes a smooth surface for the joint to move. And so in people with osteoarthritis, the cartilage itself becomes uneven, and that's why some people may describe sort of popping and cracking or mm-hmm. feel some sense of unevenness when they're moving, particularly in the weight-bearing joints. So that's the cartilage. So it protects the bone.
And then you mentioned the synovium. What's that?
So the synovium is a tissue that really lines the joint capsule. And normally the synovium is a very thin and lacy structure. It may help lubricate the joint when there's fluid. It makes fluid so that the joint becomes lubricated. But it's basically the inside of the capsule of the joint.
Okay. Now, you mentioned injury, and we have an email from Ashley in Clearwater, Florida. She's interested in how injury, specifically a fall, can trigger arthritis. She says, my mom fell at work, and ever since then, she's been having really bad arthritis pain in her joints. How does that work?
Well, Ashley, that's a very good question, and I think there are many smart people working on the answer to that question, but let me just share a few thoughts. An injury can be many different things. I mean, you can fall and hurt your knee and get a bruise and get up and nothing happens. And in that case, we don't anticipate that there would be arthritis. But if you've had derangement to one of the structures inside the joint, say the meniscus or one of the other supporting structures, then there often is an inflammatory reaction that occurs when that tissue is healing. And that reaction, we think, probably leads to sort of development of arthritis in the joint. But it's highly variable, and not everybody who injures will get arthritis.
Now, you mentioned that exercise, like runners, may not get osteoarthritis, even though they might be putting on hundreds, thousands of miles over the course of their lifetime. And yet football players and soccer players seem to be more vulnerable. What is the difference?
Well, I think the difference really is really injury. So I think many people run, and patients and friends often ask me, should I not run because I'm 50 or 60 years old and, pounding the pavement is going to hurt my knees. And for most runners, you know, they should not be particularly concerned. The problem comes when you injure a joint. So if you're running on a wet pavement and you slip and fall, or you step in a hole and you twist your knee, that's where runners get into trouble. If you think about football players or soccer players or even basketball players, you know, they are really testing their joints with every step, and they don't know from 1 minute to the next where their feet are going to be, so they're constantly reacting to that change. So injury, I think, is really the crux of that.
We frequently hear about bone on bone, and we have a call from DJ in Burlington. DJ, what is the story, please?
Well, hello, Joe and Terry. When I was younger, I played baseball, I did gymnastics and all, and I danced, I did a lot, and I'm 62 now, and I recently went to the doctor, and they told me my kneecaps don't have any fluid behind them anymore, and they're wearing ruts in the bone behind them.
So that's the bone on bone. What does that mean, Dr. Jonas?
So a minute ago, we talked about the articular cartilage sort of sitting at the end of the bone and protecting the bone. So if you've had injury or you have arthritis and that cartilage is worn down, what's underneath that is bone. And so when the cartilage is gone, the two opposing bones touch each other. And so that's what I suspect that the physician is talking about when they say there's bone on bone.
Now, of course, the question I'm sure that DJ wants to know is, now what can I do?
Right. So that's a good question. So it really depends on how much this is hurting, how much symptoms you have. Is it painful? Are there any functional limitations? So are you having difficulty doing anything that you need to do, walking up and down stairs, all kinds of things that we do in our daily life? If you have relatively few symptoms, then that's great, and there's not much to do about that. If there's pain, then, you know, using analgesics may be helpful.
Such as?
Such as acetaminophen is usually our first line of therapy for osteoarthritis. Some patients take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory medications if that doesn't work. Maintaining a healthy weight, I think, is probably before anything else the most important thing, because if we're loading our joints with too much weight, that can contribute to pain. And maintaining as much physical activity is very important.
Well, we'll talk more about non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen after the break. We're talking with Dr. Beth Jonas. She is a rheumatologist with the University of North Carolina Thurston Arthritis Research Center in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and we welcome your calls and questions. We'll talk about more treatments after the break.
Have you had success with a non-drug treatment like fish oil or vitamin D?
What are the side effects of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like ibuprofen or naproxen? Are they good enough to take the risks? And we'd love to hear from you. Again, that number, 888-472-3366. If our lines are full, send us an email, radio@peoplespharmacy.com, or via Twitter. We're at People's Pharmacy.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon. Thanks for listening to this podcast of The People's Pharmacy. If you like it, why not rate or review it in the iTunes store? We'd appreciate it. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Terry Graydon.
And I'm Joe Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Reddix Industries, makers of utterly smooth creams and lotions that moisturize deeply to make dry skin feel soft and smooth. The number's 800-345-7339. The website is uttercream.com.
If you'd like to purchase a CD of this show, you can call 800-732-2334. It's show number 1076. You can also find it online at peoplespharmacy.com.
Today we're talking about osteoarthritis. Is there any way to prevent joint pain? Once it shows up, how is it best treated? We invite you to ask a question or share your story about what's worked for you at 888-472-3366. If our lines are full, you can email us radio@peoplespharmacy.com, or you can reach us via Twitter. We're at People's Pharmacy.
We're talking with Dr. Beth Jonas. She's a rheumatologist with the University of North Carolina's Thurston Arthritis Research Center in Chapel Hill. She's an associate professor of medicine and director of the UNC Rheumatology Fellowship Training Program. And we go to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Seema, welcome to the People's Pharmacy. What is your question, please?
Thank you. Hi, Joe and Terry, and good morning. I was wondering what evidence there is for yoga in the treatment and prevention of arthritis.
So, Seema, that's a good question. I don't think there's a lot of robust evidence from the literature that we can point to, but what I can tell you from my experience is that yoga can be a very useful modality for people with joint pain for a couple of reasons. As you know, that in yoga, you're really stretching and strengthening a lot of the structures that support your joints, so your muscles or your tendons. And we know that for people with arthritis, that can be very important in preserving joint function and decreasing pain. I don't think we really know if it can prevent it. I'm not sure we know of much of anything that can prevent arthritis, but I do think that it can be a helpful modality in treating people with joint pain.
Now, Seema, I'm just curious, do you do yoga? Do you have experience with yoga for people who perhaps are complaining about joint pain?
So I do yoga. I've been doing it for a little bit over a year, and I had been experiencing pain, mainly in my back, but I've also started just having focal joint pain, like a knee pain here, or another pain there, and I really do feel that it has helped. I haven't taken any medications yet, but I was just wondering if, you know, I should kind of continue on this course, or if what kind of literature evidence there was. But personally, I'm finding it helpful.
So I would say if it's helping you, it's great. And if you can manage without medicines, even better. So I think I would keep going if I were you.
Seema, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Speaking of medicines, we have an email from Gretel who wants to know about cortisone shots. This is something that doctors frequently offer people who have sore joints. They'll say, well, I'll give you a shot into the joint. And Gretel wants to know, are they safe? How many can one have without causing trouble? So please give us the rundown on cortisone shots.
So cortisone shots are really not the first line of therapy. I do want to say that. I think generally we recommend that people use acetaminophen or topical or sometimes oral nonsteroidals. But if that really does not control the joint pain, then corticosteroid injections can be helpful. The concern about using corticosteroid injections is that there's some older evidence that suggests that using cortisone in a joint may actually cause more arthritis, although the data for that are pretty weak. So as a rule of thumb, I generally recommend no more than 3 cortisone injections in a single joint in a calendar year. As the sort of the limit, although this is really not based on anything but my experience. And I think that that's pretty well held recommendation from most physicians.
I'd like to go back to Seema's question for just a moment. The idea that we should continue moving those joints, because when we're in pain, when the back hurts, when the knees ache, the inclination is to sit in the recliner and not go out and do very much. But it's my understanding that when you immobilize those joints, when you sit in the recliner instead of going for a walk, that you might be asking for trouble down the road.
So that's a great question, Joe. You know, and it's a little counterintuitive when I tell my patients, I'd like you to move on this joint that hurts. And they often look at me like I'm a little bit nutty.
Or trying to torture them.
Right. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but it's actually true that immobilizing joints actually makes them more stiff and more painful. And moving the joints, although it can sometimes be painful to get started, absolutely, that for most people, moving the joint makes it feel better. Now, you have to be careful about moving a joint that's inflamed or really painful too much. So you have to be sensible and have someone help you sort of organize an exercise regimen that's best for you. But movement is critical to the care of sore joints.
I remember some years ago, we were at a public radio conference, and Marion McPartland, who at that time was quite elderly, performed for the assembled.
I think she was close to 90 at that point.
She was getting up there, and she had some pretty severe arthritis, and you could see it just by looking at her hands. And she played for us, and she made a comment that suggested that keeping playing was what allowed her to function despite the arthritis.
Yes, we hear this a lot in people who've sort of embraced this idea of being active will come and say, if I weren't active, I certainly would have more pain and less function. So I think that's true.
Dr. Jonas, you mentioned topical NSAIDs. And, you know, they were very slow to enter the U.S. I mean, we would go to other countries, for example, Italy. You could buy Voltaren gel, diclofenac, over the counter. You still can't buy it over the counter here, whereas you can buy, you know, ibuprofen as much as you want. You can buy all kinds of other NSAIDs like naproxen, which is available in Aleve. So, you know, we're very, I'll call it, As I see it, promiscuous in our consumption of oral anti-inflammatory drugs. But topical, no, that's prescription only. Whereas other countries are a little bit, they've changed that formula a little bit. You can't just buy hundreds of pills of ibuprofen at a time. I'm curious about your experience with topical NSAIDs. A, do they work? And B, are they safer than oral NSAIDs?
So you're right. We've just recently started using topical NSAIDs in a big way, and I think they are helpful. They don't help everyone, but they're certainly worth a try. And they are really in the first line of our osteoarthritis recommendations. For some people, they really do reduce pain. And I think that they probably are safer because you're not taking the medication systemically. It doesn't come in contact with your GI tract. And so I think they're very, very useful.
Let's just run down the side effects of nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. But even before we do that, I'm curious as to how effective they are, because they are the number one arrow in the quiver. It's what everybody thinks of when they think about arthritis medicine. And we were astonished when Dr. Steve Nissen shared with us, what was the study called?
Precision.
Yeah, in which they looked at Celebrex versus naproxen versus ibuprofen. And he said they were all about identical, and they all reduced pain, what was it, 13 points out of 100?
Yeah, about that. And there was also a tremendous dropout rate. People did not stick with this study for, I think, the 2 years it was supposed to run. They were looking at harm, but the study didn't indicate that there was a huge amount of benefit.
So what are the benefits and risks of NSAIDs in your experience?
So I think that they definitely reduce pain and swelling in many people with arthritis. But they're not great for everyone. There are some people that take NSAIDs and really don't have any benefit at all. Some people have a modest benefit. And I have some people who think, you know, that it's the best next thing to sliced bread. So it's really highly variable, and it's hard to predict. And there are many, many NSAIDs out there. Of course, all the ones we can buy over the counter, but there are many, many more prescription ones. And their efficacy may vary in an individual patient. So I think it's worth a try in people who've not responded to acetaminophen or topical NSAIDs.
And side effects, because we've heard a lot lately about cardiovascular harm.
So, you know, the major toxicity really is that they can affect the GI tract. So ulcer disease is a big problem, and we definitely see that. The concern about cardiovascular disease, as you know, was well studied in the PRECISION study, and there really was no difference between any of the NSAIDs. I think it remains somewhat of a concern, but there isn't one that's any better than any other in that regard. It can affect your kidneys, so patients with chronic kidney disease should not take NSAIDs. Patients with diabetes tend to be very sensitive to NSAIDs. And so if you're going to be on an NSAID on a regular basis, this really needs to be monitored by your physician. So even if you're taking an over-the-counter medicine that your physician is not prescribing to you, they should know that you're on it and monitor it at least once a year to make sure that your kidneys are okay and that you're not having any untoward side effects.
And you can reach us with your question at 888-472-3366. We go now to Bethany, North Carolina. Craig, welcome to the People's Pharmacy. Your question?
Hi, Joe and Terry. I've been using glucosamine and chondroitin for many, many, many years. I'm 48 years old, and probably for 15 years, I just would have trouble walking down the stairs, and I found one that used to be used in the veterinary industry, and then they brought it over to the people sector. And without it, I'm a tin man. But then I recommend it to some other people, and they don't get the same results. Also, recently I saw a rheumatologist because of some other issues, and she also talked to me about tart cherry and ginger and turmeric, which I take every day as well. And I'm just wanting to hear your thoughts on those.
Well, I'm curious, Craig, how are you doing on the tart cherries and the turmeric and the ginger?
I suppose it's helping because I never stopped the glucosamine and chondroitin. And that's been, I think, the number one thing that has always kept me limber enough to do what I want to do. But if I go off that for 3 days, I'm the Tin Man from the Wizard of Oz.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your question. Dr. Jonas, we hear this all the time, and I was fascinated when you said some people get great benefit from ibuprofen or other NSAIDs, and then other people not so much. We've heard the same thing about glucosamine. Some people say, like Craig, it's made a huge difference. It allows me to go up and downstairs and do stuff. And then other people say, you know, didn't do a darn thing for me.
And the GATE trial and several other placebo-controlled trials conducted in the U.S. show essentially no benefit over placebo, which still allows for that kind of variation between individuals, whereas many of the European trials do show some benefit.
So this variability in patients' response has been my experience also. So Craig mentions that he gets a great response, yet people that he knows do not. And I've observed that in my practice also, and why that is, I don't know. You know, my feeling about glucosamine is for some people it may improve symptoms. And so in those patients, I encourage them to stay on it as long as they're not having any side effects. And the side effects are pretty minimal with glucosamine in most people. But there's another issue with glucosamine that rheumatologists and other researchers have been looking at, is whether or not glucosamine can prevent the disease from getting worse.
Oh.
And so those are things that people are looking at in clinical trials. And I think that pretty much across the board, glucosamine is not shown to decrease the progression of the disease. So it may have some benefit for some people in terms of symptom control, and I think that's great. But the other thing that we want to know is, can we prevent it from getting worse? And there's really not a lot of evidence that that's the case with glucosamine.
Now, Craig also mentioned tart cherry juice. And you know what's so fascinating about tart cherries? They actually block COX-2. So here's this enzyme that is important in inflammation. Celebrex, celecoxib, is a COX-2 inhibitor. So here's cherry juice doing very much the same thing that Celebrex does, maybe not as powerfully, not as potent, but it does seem to have some activity against this inflammatory process. What's your experience been? Because I'm sure patients come in and say, oh, Dr. Jonas, I heard on the People's Pharmacy, tart cherry juice, ginger, turmeric. Any science to support that?
So there's some thought that there are compounds in all of these things that may have some anti-inflammatory properties. There's no doubt about that. We really don't have robust clinical trials that are placebo-controlled where we can point to these and say, yes, this is helpful. I do have a lot of patients who take a lot of these things. Turmeric seems to be pretty popular these days. And I think that there's probably something to this. The question is, what's the right dose?
And so, that is a big question.
And so we really don't know the answer to that question. So what I tell patients is, if you want to try it, let's do it one at a time, right? So Craig added all of these things on top of his glucosamine, and we don't know whether it's all the glucosamine or these other things, but, to try to be a little scientific in your own care to say, okay, I'm going to try this one thing, try it for X number of weeks, let's see how it does. If it works, great. If not, I'm going to move on.
What's a reasonable length of time? 6 weeks?
Yeah, and nobody knows the answer to that question.
Okay.
When I advise a trial of glucosamine, which I sometimes will do, I usually say 3 months.
Okay.
But again, it's really pretty empiric, not based on really any data.
We have an email from Nancy in Binghamton, New York, who says, I have arthritis in my fingers and they've become deformed. They're painful once in a while, but not all the time. And somebody, not her doctor, says she should stop taking calcium supplements because that's why her fingers are deformed. Her doctor says it isn't true, so what's the story? Calcium problem, not a problem.
I would say it's probably not a problem without knowing more about Nancy and her hands.
Yes, but exactly.
I don't think there's any evidence for that.
But there is some evidence to suggest that people who are taking really high doses of calcium may have some calcification of soft tissue. And so we've kind of reduced our enthusiasm for calcium over the last 5 years. Any thoughts at all about, those whopping doses that people think are going to ward off osteoporosis?
So this is an area of tremendous controversy, and I would say that there's not a big consensus among researchers in this area, but it is one of those things that the pendulum seems to move back and forth. I do feel, particularly for older postmenopausal women, if they don't have adequate calcium in their diet, that they should take a calcium supplement, but that they should discuss their particular risk with their physician.
After the break, we'll talk more about natural approaches for osteoarthritis.
We'll also learn about joint replacements. When do they make sense?
And we invite you to join our conversation about how to prevent or treat joint pain. You can ask Dr. Beth Jonas your questions. Our lines are open at 888-472-3366. If our lines are full, email us radio@peoplespharmacy.com or reach us via Twitter. We're at People's Pharmacy.
You're listening to The People's Pharmacy with Joe and Terry Graydon.
If you value the health information you get when you listen to The People's Pharmacy, consider subscribing to our email newsletter. You'll get the latest health news and information on upcoming podcasts delivered to your inbox twice a week. Look for the link at peoplespharmacy.com. Welcome back to The People's Pharmacy. I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. The People's Pharmacy is made possible in part by Red X Industries, makers of utterly smooth creams and lotions, helping dry, cracked skin feel utterly soft and smooth. 800-345-7339. Online at uttercream.com.
If you would like to purchase a CD of this show, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is 1076. Or visit our website, peoplespharmacy.com.
Our guest in the studio is Dr. Beth Jonas. She's a rheumatologist with the University of North Carolina's Thurston Arthritis Research Center in Chapel Hill. She's an associate professor of medicine and director of the UNC Rheumatology Fellowship Training Program.
Today, our topic is arthritis. Do you suffer from stiff joints, sore knees, or aching hips? Share your story or ask a question. Our lines are open at 888-472-3366.
And we have an email from Eva who says, I have osteoarthritis. One hip replacement has been done. I have pain in the other hip and knee. I'm hearing more about stem cell and packed red blood cell platelet treatments. Are they safe and effective? And so the question is about stem cell and packed red blood cell platelet treatments. Can you tell us anything about that? And then I'd like to follow up with a question about joint replacement.
So the data on stem cells and platelet-rich plasma, which I think is what Eva may be referring to, is really in its infancy. I don't think we have really enough information on these therapies to make recommendations broadly for patients. Mm-hmm. These are certainly areas that many researchers are looking at, and there are some data that suggests that they're promising, but in somebody who really has end-stage disease and is ready for joint replacement, they're unlikely to be of benefit.
Now, joint replacement. Who needs a joint replaced? When do you make that decision and how? And how good are they?
So joint replacement is really a very personal decision for people. We generally will recommend joint replacement when the joint has been damaged to a point where we, you know, really think it's not functioning well. So there needs to be enough joint damage. Many patients will have pain that can't be treated with all of the usual modalities. So if they have, they really can't manage their pain. And the other indication would be dysfunction. So if they're having difficulty doing things that they need or want to do, even sometimes just simple things. So it really is a combination of joint damage, pain, and dysfunction. And then really a look at what the expected outcome is going to be. So for most people with joint replacements, and I'm talking mostly about hip and knee right now, which are the major joint replacements we do, the outcomes are very, very good.
There's been a lot of controversy about the material and a lot of lawsuits because some of the material that was used, you know, a decade or so ago could create some complications. How would people know, you know, what kind of material to use, what kind of procedure to have, because there are a variety of options that are now available. Give us a little insight onto how to do your homework when it comes to joint replacement.
Well, let me just say that joint replacement has really advanced considerably over the last 10 to 15 years, and I think that most of the prostheses that are going in now have been shown to be very safe and effective, so I don't want listeners to be overly nervous about that. I would say that if you've had a joint replacement many years ago and you're having trouble with it, then you want to talk to your surgeon and let them know. I mean, some of the older replacements were not lasting as long as some of the ones that we're putting in now, so some of them do fail over time. But in general, most of the prostheses, in fact, all of the prostheses that I'm aware of that are being placed now are really there's very little worry about that.
We got a question a moment ago about diet. And the question had to do with inflammatory diet versus non-inflammatory diet. I don't quite know what that was about, but do you have any thoughts about, you know, foods that might be better for joints and foods that might be worse? We've heard that there are pro-inflammatory fats, for example. Trans fats are now, you know, getting a bad rap, and deservedly so. Is there such a thing as an arthritis diet?
So, yes, there is such a thing as an arthritis diet. The question is, does it really help? So lots been written about the arthritis diet and inflammatory foods and non-inflammatory foods, but really there's not a lot of good solid data that I would say I would recommend, you know, X, Y, or Z diet. But a few things I would like to say about diet. You know, number one is that, you know, we mentioned earlier in the show about maintaining a healthy weight. So that's probably a guiding principle for anyone who's looking at their diet. They want to make sure they're eating a healthy diet, you know, enough protein, low fat, plenty of fresh fruits and vegetables. And so, you know, it's really a very common sense recommendation that I make to my patients. In terms of foods that might promote inflammation, you know, a lot of my patients will say nightshade vegetables, so tomatoes, eggplants, things of that nature make their arthritis worse. And I tell people to sort of pay attention to their diet and pay attention to how they're feeling, and if there are foods that make them feel worse, then to eliminate them.
It sounds like a food diary would be a good idea.
That can be helpful. And I've had patients do these crazy elimination diets where they sort of stop eating almost everything and then add things back slowly. Mm-hmm. But I've never seen anyone feel very successful after that that enterprise. So I don't generally recommend that. I will say that sugar probably promotes inflammation, and I generally recommend to cut back simple sugars if possible.
That sounds like good advice altogether. Whether it helps your joints or not, it'll help the
it's
rest
good for
of your
you.
Health. 888-472-3366 is the number if you'd like to talk to Dr. Beth Jonas. And we go to Viola, Wisconsin. Darlene, what is your comment?
Yes. Hello, everyone. Enjoying this show tremendously. I am a therapist. I deal with many orthopedic and joint problems on a daily basis. And at least in our area, chiropractic care seems to be very popular. However, I have many people that complain about pain being worse after their joints are manipulated. And many times it is in the cervical area that the pain continues. And these treatments are given over many, many months, sometimes ongoing for years. That these joints and bones are manipulated, and I would like to know what the good doctor has to say about that.
Well, yeah, that's a tough question, Darlene.
You know, it really might be very specific to the particular chiropractor and the particular chiropractic.
And the particular joint.
Patient, yeah. So, you know, there are certainly many indications for chiropractic care, and some of them are arthritis and some of them are not. And it's hard to say with any certainty about, you know, what's happening in your community. But my experience has been that for most chiropractors are pretty sensitive about patients with joint damage and joint dysfunction. And and I have not seen, you know, any difficulty with that. But again, it's hard for me to comment generally on what's going on in your community.
For a moment, let's talk about rheumatoid arthritis, because that's a whole different kettle of fish, so to speak. And you deal with all kinds of arthritis, not just osteoarthritis. You almost can't turn on television these days without seeing a commercial for one of these biologics, these immune modifiers, if you like. And they make it seem as if, wow, these drugs are the cure.
So you're talking about things like Enbrel and Humira, right?
Exactly. And so I'd like to get your perspective from a clinician's point of view. How good are they? What are the risks? Give us a sense.
So let me just back up and talk about rheumatoid arthritis, because it's really different than osteoarthritis, which we've been talking about. Rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease. It is profoundly inflammatory. It can affect people from their teenage years up into their 80s and 90s, and it can be very, very destructive. Not that osteoarthritis isn't, but rheumatoid arthritis probably more so. So it's really a very different kind of arthritis. And one of the things over the last, I would say, 20 or 25 years is that we've really gotten an excellent handle on what is really happening in the joint. What is the pathophysiology of this disease? And that has led to a group of really effective therapies that we call biologic therapies, which really target the basis of the inflammation. So, you know, having trained at a time when we didn't have these, I can really see the difference. This has made a world of difference to people with rheumatoid arthritis. So what they say is true. The medicines have really been revolutionary. But as you mentioned, they're not without side effects. Anytime we modulate the immune system, there can be untoward effects. The major concern we have is the risk for infection. So patients who have ongoing infection should not be treated with biologic therapy. And physicians are often very cognizant of that before starting that. So infection is the major concern over the long run.
You know, the one that always gets my attention is when they mention the big C word, cancer, lymphoma. And you go, whoa, I don't want to trade in rheumatoid arthritis for cancer. But I get a sense that that's really very, very rare.
It is rare. And, you know, when these drugs first came on the market, there was a significant worry about cancer. And again, like infection, anytime you modulate the immune system, there's a risk of cancer or a theoretic risk of cancer. We know that patients with rheumatoid arthritis do have a higher risk of certain cancers, particularly lymphomas and leukemias, compared to other people without rheumatoid arthritis, whether they take a medicine or not. But we don't think that there's any significant increase in that risk with biologic therapy. The caveat to that is probably some forms of skin cancer. So basal cell carcinomas and squamous cell carcinomas are probably seen in higher rates in patients on biologic therapy. So we generally recommend screening, big hat, sunscreen, and the like for patients on biologic therapy.
I'm wondering what you see as exciting research in the area of either rheumatoid or osteoarthritis.
So, you know, in the area of rheumatoid arthritis, I mentioned, you know, we've developed all these new biologic therapies, but there clearly are a subset of patients who don't respond, and they may be on any number of these therapies and still have aggressive disease. So there is some research looking at newer mechanisms of action of drugs that may help that portion of the population that still suffer with rheumatoid arthritis. In terms of osteoarthritis, if we think about that, we really are not at the point in osteoarthritis as we are in rheumatoid arthritis of understanding really what drives the disease. And a lot of people are working on this, you know, at UNC and really around the world of understanding that, which might lead to therapies that could prevent the progression of the disease, or what we call disease-modifying therapies. A lot of things have been studied, mostly been unimpressive, but, you know, I think and I hope that over the next decade or so that we will see some disease-modifying therapies for osteoarthritis.
We got a question from a listener who wants to know why his osteoarthritis moves around. So he says, you know, sometimes my little finger hurts on my right hand.
Are you sure it's osteoarthritis?
And then it moves over to the other hand. And then sometimes my knee hurts on the right side, and then it's my ankle on the left side. So why is it that the joint pain moves and then goes away?
And the reason I'm asking, are you sure it's really osteoarthritis, is that this pattern is familiar. And this is something my dad has reported, but he has been diagnosed with psoriatic arthritis.
So you make a very good point. I think it's important to make sure we've got the right diagnosis. That's not to say that osteoarthritis can't do this, but it does make you think that there might be something else going on. And so I think it's important to make sure that it is osteoarthritis. Having said that, you know, many patients report this, that they wake up one morning and today it's their hand that bothers them, and tomorrow it might be the knee. That observation is real, although sometimes patients will think they're going a little nutty when they observe that and describe that to me, but we hear it all the time. I think this is very real, and I don't know why it is.
So it kind of goes to the heart of the mystery of osteoarthritis. Just to go back and refresh some of the points that we've made. Number one, osteoarthritis may not be a disease of wear and tear. We pointed out that runners, long-distance runners, may not have more knee arthritis than other people.
And it isn't necessarily a disease of older people. As we've heard this morning from our listeners who have called in and said, well, my pain started when I was in my 40s or, you know, earlier. Yeah.
Are there any other myths that we need to destroy today?
So, I mean, one myth is that arthritis only occurs in older people. I mean, we see children with arthritis. You know, juvenile arthritis can occur and it can be quite devastating. So it, you know, arthritis is a disease of really everybody. We do see it more in women than in men, which is interesting, and the reasons for that are not altogether clear. The other myth is that you can't exercise with arthritis, I really want our listeners to know that, is that it, even for patients with a lot of arthritis and painful arthritis, they often can find some way to exercise. And if you can't exercise on land, we get lots of folks in the water. And water can be very, very helpful to maintain the joint range of motion and integrity. So exercise is really important. And that the other thing, I think some people feel that arthritis is inevitable, and it is not. I think there's a lot we can do to prevent arthritis from affecting our lives.
What can we do to prevent arthritis either from developing or from interfering with our lives?
Yeah, I'm not sure we can prevent arthritis from developing, but we can prevent arthritis from affecting our lives to a certain degree. So we mentioned weight loss. So if you're overweight, you should lose weight.
Easier said than done, I might add.
Yes, I'm quite aware of that. Thank you. but I think there are things that we can do, and you don't have to be skinny, right? So that's the other thing too. Even small or modest weight loss can be very helpful. So if you even just lose 10% of your body weight or even 5% of your body weight, just that amount can take the pressure off, particularly knees. And I've had some patients who are on the road to joint replacement because of pain who lose some weight, and they really get by much better.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today, Dr. Jonas, and thank you for listening. That's all the time we have. Dr. Beth Jonas is a rheumatologist with the University of North Carolina's Thurston Arthritis Research Center in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. She's also an associate professor of medicine and director of the UNC Rheumatology Fellowship Training Program. You'll find links to the clinic from our website.
Lynn Siegel produced today's show. Sophie Copeland and Kimani Hall provided technical assistance. Al Wodarski is the engineer. Dave Creighton edits our interviews.
The People's Pharmacy is produced at the studios of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC.
The People's Pharmacy theme music is by B.J. Lederman.
To order today's show, you can call 800-732-2334. Today's show is 1076. That number again, 800-732-2334. Online at peoplespharmacy.com. When you visit the site, you can tell us what you think about the show, find information about prescription drugs, herbs, and home remedies, and we'd love to hear from you. What do you do for your arthritis pain? Please share your story.
When you are there at the website, you can subscribe to the free podcast of our show or our free email newsletter. It's all there at peoplespharmacy.com. Friend us on Facebook. We invite local listeners to come to our talk about home remedies this Thursday evening in Raleigh. You can learn more at irregardless.com or look for the link on our website.
In Durham, North Carolina, I'm Joe Graydon.
And I'm Terry Graydon. Thank you so much for listening, and please do join us again next week.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. If so, please consider taking a minute to write a review on iTunes. And thanks for listening to The People's Pharmacy.